Blog Talk Radio.
Imagine you are in a wheelchair at 88 pounds with cancer and a week and a half to live. What would you do? Today's guest not only survived, but she has continued to thrive and publish and share her story with the world. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the upcoming 30 Lessons for Your Soul, 30 Love Lessons. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can, and often does, get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. The former director of Nutrition for the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, Dr. Marilyn Joyce, is a five-time cancer survivor, now a 27-plus year thriver. Speaks to such organizations as Xerox, the FBI, Girl Scouts, Boeing, UCLA, Scripps Medical Center, Sloan Kettering, American Cancer Society, the Wellness Community Centers, and Peak Potentials, now called PEAKS. Dr. Joyce, a registered dietitian with her doctorate in psychology and biochemistry and human nutrition, has been inspiring audiences around the world as a motivational and inspirational keynote speaker, seminar leader, and trainer. She has been the featured guest on Doctor to Doctor, Lisa, Montel Williams, Maury Povich, PBS, Jenny Jones, and so many more. Dr. Joyce is the author of the best-selling books, 5 Minutes to Health, I Can't Believe It's Tofu, and her much-sought-after book, Instant Energy, The 5 Keys to Unlimited Energy and Vitality. So I am delighted to welcome you, Dr. Marilyn Joyce.
It's wonderful to be on your show, Dr. Erica. I am just thrilled. This is a highlight this month.
Thank you. And we spoke many years ago because we both had written a chapter in the same book, Adventures in Manifesting. So
that's right.
It goes back a long time.
It does. Oh, my goodness.
I can't wait. Yes, I can't wait to hear your story that you're going to share with people. Like, how did you come out of this situation? And right before we started, I mentioned to you that I had attended the live event, The Truth About Cancer. And now there is so much more information out in the world about possible alternative treatments for cancer. But when you started with this process, that wasn't out there.
No, it was not out there at all, Dr. Erica. In fact, the issue back then was that there was almost nothing available. And certainly we didn't have the internet. Now, the internet, you know, it has its pros and cons because there's a lot of information that isn't accurate, but there's also a lot more information available for us to pick and choose from, there was none of that available back then. I mean, if you were going to do any research, you had to go to a library, and if you were in a wheelchair sick with cancer, the likelihood of going to a library very often was minimal, to say the least.
So why don't you tell us your story? You know, from the beginning, how did you discover you had cancer? What happened? How did you get down to 88 pounds? You know, and then how did you overcome that?
Sure, I would love to. Basically, you know, it was a journey for me because I was only in my 30s, and so I was working in the hospital situation, you know, in hospitals and nursing homes and long care facilities, et cetera, and as a dietitian, and I was an administrative dietitian predominantly back then. So I would see a lot of illnesses, you know, as cancer in particular, but it would not be what I was diagnosed with. So it was, you know, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, you know, the cancers that used to be associated with aging. That was the way we looked at it then. Today we can't say the same thing because there are so many young people that are being diagnosed with those very same illnesses that used to be diagnosed when you were a senior. So, you know, that was what I was used to seeing. So, you know, when I was asked to go and speak to my dietetic association and be a keynote speaker, it was like a highlight for me. It was like I had arrived. So I'm getting prepared for that. Now I'm also raising my kids and, you know, I was a mom. I was, you know, working long hours as an administrator. And so my life was pretty hectic and pretty busy. I won't say it was really happy because I was not working at work that I loved. I would have loved to have worked with people as an administrator. I was working with people, but not in a form that I loved. So there's a message there, you know, do what you love. I was not doing what I loved. So every day was a challenge work-wise. But anyway, I looked in the mirror. I saw this spot under my eye. I'd had it for my entire life from the age of 12. I'd gotten hit by a baseball and in the eye, and it was nothing significant. You know, it was just a blue spot. But all of a sudden, that blue spot wasn't just a blue spot anymore. It was a black and crusty, you know, scaly-looking spot, and it looked awful. And it was actually vanity, I'm ashamed to say, but it was vanity that took me to the doctor. And I said, get this thing off my face. I've got a presentation to do, and I don't want this thing on my face. And the doctor asked me how long I'd had it, and I said, you know, quite frankly, I said I'd had it my whole life, but it didn't look like this. And he said, you know, how long does it look like this? And I honestly didn't know, to be quite honest. I was, like, so busy. I was not looking in the mirror at my face very often other than to throw on some mascara and run out the door. You know, when you're a mom, you're just not – that's not where your focus is. And so, anyway, it turned out to be melanoma, but fortunately early-stage melanoma. And we were able to remove that, and I thought I was on my way to, you know, being healthy. And I didn't really know much about melanoma. I had no clue that melanoma grew fast and deep. So I learned a lot over the ensuing years because I had a second bout with melanoma, fortunately, again, early stage. But at about a week and a half after I was diagnosed with melanoma, I was doubled over with pain, which I'd had for about 3 years. And for about 2 years, it was misdiagnosed as PMS. Or, you know, all kinds of other things, but nothing serious. You know, because of my age, I'm sure, nobody took it seriously. You know, I was told to take some pills and I'd be okay every month. And long and short of it was that I was diagnosed with uterine cancer stage 4. And this is a cancer that did run in my family. Two of my great aunts had died from this, but they were significantly older than I was. So when I was told what I had, you know, what I was dealing with, you could have truly knocked me over with a feather because I thought I was, you know, I was young, I was healthy, I was vibrant and all the rest of those things, those adjectives that go with being a single mom dashing all over the place with work and kids and stuff like that. And then, you know, diagnosed with uterine cancer, stage 4, no less. I mean, it was like a death sentence. And needless to say, I was in the medical world, so I went for medical treatment. And at that time, it was bolus chemotherapy. You know, you went into the hospital, they gave you the bolus injection of chemotherapy, and I spent so much time talking to the great white telephone in the bathroom, if you get my drift, that I knew I wasn't going to get well. And so it was a decision that I made with my kids that I was going to stop the chemotherapy and I was going to try whatever else was out there. And I literally did. I mean, I quit after 3 rounds. I didn't go the 6 rounds they recommended. And I literally traveled the world looking for the magic bullet, the miracle cure. and went in and out of that journey with cancer over the next 5 years. And finally, in 1989, I found myself 88 pounds in a wheelchair, given less than 2 weeks to live. And so it was a very, very challenging journey. I was at the end of the road.
Marilyn, when you were traveling, what did you discover? Like, where did you go? What places did you go to? And what did you discover?
That's a great question, Dr. Erica. I mean, I traveled literally around the world, but the main places were, you know, places in Europe that had facilities that were working with cancer in a holistic way, and places in Mexico, as well as South America. And, you know, there were a few other places I went, but not so much for looking for the cure, but just to experience, like, the Soviet Union before the wall came down, and to work there as on a peace mission to to leave a legacy worth remembering, I guess you'd say. And during that time, of course, I met with a lot of people who had worked with cancer or who had alternative ideas or treatments that they recommended. So, you know, it was like the universe and God kind of took me to the places that I needed to go to find these different cures. The things that I think made, and of course Canada was another place, and I lived in Canada so at the time. So I tried the SEACT, which was that was actually one of the treatments that did make a difference, but it wasn't sustaining. It worked, and then I was diagnosed with cancer again. You know, I had another recurrence. So, you know, there was that. There were injections that I used that were from over in Europe, in Austria. And then there were, you know, the different kinds of nutritional therapies that I tried in Mexico. I don't think at the time there was anything in the United States that was alternative that I was aware of. I mean, there might have been, but, you know, at that time you couldn't just go online and look up, oh, what's available in the U.S. as alternative. So those were the kinds of things I tried. And basically it was injecting myself with basically a B17 was what it was. And then there were, you know, like I said, the nutritional therapies that I tried. And they were successful to a degree, but nothing sustaining. And it wasn't until, you know, I was at the end of the road when the miracle, what I call the miracle weekend, occurred. I mean, at that time I didn't call it the miracle weekend, but reflecting back over the years, that's what it ended up being, because that was when I met Jim, the Vitamix man, who at that point, just to, reference what was going on, I was not able to eat or drink anything when I was at the bottom of the barrel. I was literally only able to suck on ice chips, and I was in a wheelchair and I couldn't move. And that was my lowest point. And that was when I met Jim, the Vitamix man, when I was wheeled into a home show. And he was using this machine called a Vitamix, which I refer to as a 2-horsepower lawnmower for food. And there was nothing else like that available at the time. I guess today there are different kinds of machines that are available, but then there wasn't. And so basically what Jim prepared was this ice chip form of cantaloupe fruit and seeds. And that was, you know, when I reflected back over the years again, trying to figure out what was it about that cantaloupe. It couldn't have just been the fruit, and it wasn't. It was with the fact that he had also used the seeds in the fruit, and the seeds in cantaloupe and other, you know, squash, melon, et cetera, are loaded with nutrition. And in the third world countries, or the, you know, the underdeveloped countries, they actually, the seeds, they roast them and eat them. In our culture, we throw them in the garbage and they're loaded with nutrition. So there was that aspect, that the nutrition part. And, you know, just going forward, 6 weeks later, I was still alive. So my kids and I were very reflective of the fact that, you know, I had actually outlived the prognosis of 2 weeks. So that was the one, that was on the Saturday. And on the Sunday, I met Dr. Bernie Siegel. And that was a very major turning point for me, because he talked to me about, well, he asked me if I'd done a gratitude journal. And I asked him, I told him I thought he was crazy. I mean, what did I have to be grateful for? I'm dying, for gosh sake. And he said, well, quite frankly, you're here, and you're still above ground, so you could be thankful for the fact that you're still here and that you have friends that care enough for you to bring you here. to this event. This might be a turning point for you. And sure enough, it was a turning point. You know, it was, that was where
I just want you to know that I'm getting, Marilyn, I'm getting chills as you're talking about this, that turning point.
It was,
it's so powerful.
Even for me, Dr. Erica, when I'm talking about it, you know, I thought that, you know how you think that it's over and it's done and it's years later, but there are times when I also feel those chills because it's like, wow, you know, I've had all these years since then. And it was that one weekend that was like that turning point, you know. It's great to think that, and, you know, quite on that whole thing of the gratitude journal, that was a really huge turning point for me, Dr. Erica, because I had never really understood how, you know, what you focus on expands. That was such a new concept to me back then. I mean, I'd heard it, didn't know what it meant. I was a scientist, you know, show me and I'll believe you. It wasn't like believe it and then you'll achieve it. You know, it was like show me and then I'll believe it. And so doing this gratitude journal, the first day it was kind of like we very rarely get cloudy, overcast days in California. So when we do, we actually enjoy them. But in Canada, it was like winter was 6 months of overcast, cloudy days. And I remember looking out of the window saying, God, if you want me to write in this journal, you have to give me a sign. And it wasn't more than a few seconds later that the sun shone through those clouds, and it only shone through those clouds for a few seconds. And my first gratitude, five gratitudes in that gratitude journal were, dear God, thank you for the sun, thank you for the sun, thank you for the sun, five times, you know, because Dr. Siegel has said, if you can't think of anything else, write the same thing five times. But at the end of the month, I wrote 138 gratitudes, and they were all different. And I realized, looking back, what you focus on expands. And I write a gratitude journal almost every day, you know. And when I'm having a really bad day, you know, because we all have those every once in a while, when I'm having a challenging day, I will write five gratitudes, and it will change my energy frequency for the day.
Wow. I recently had a healing with a friend of mine who does multiple life regression. And I was picturing that she's going to focus on the thing that was bothering me, the body part that was bothering me. But what she did was she went into my body, you know, verbally, go into your body and find that fear in there and pull it out and throw it out into the universe and find the anger and find the disappointment and the grief. And that was amazing to me, how much that is stored in our bodies. It felt so good to name it and pull it out and throw it out and then be grateful. So we really do affect our bodies. Wow.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's interesting when you're talking about that, Dr. Erica, because I just recently connected with a gentleman who was in the forces. He's a veteran. And, you know, he was talking about how when he was in Iraq, there were bombs going off all around him. And he said when he returned home, there were bombs going off all around him. You know, it was like he had brought that back with him and had to deal with that. That's how we're affected. But that's an exaggeration, just to give an example. But we all have that going on in our lives. We're continually storing stuff inside of us from experiences in our lives. And it's usually not the good stuff that we remember when we're really having a frustrating day. It's the anxiety producing things in our bodies. So if we can find ways to remove those, wow, it can change our lives.
So how can we avoid this worry and anxiety trap when everything around us seems discouraging, negative, hopeless? You know, you must have felt hopeless at one point, especially the doctors telling you. So definitely, you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that a doctor friend of mine said about me is that my sweet spot is that I'm a hope bringer. And when people say that hope is just, you know, a fallacy or whatever, there's a lot of negativity about the word hope. And I'm saying, nope, hope is what saved my life, really. Because it's when you have hope that you keep looking for an answer. If you have no hope, you stop and you die. You know, and I'm not just talking about cancer. I'm talking about life in general. You know, the suicide is a result of no hope. So hope is really a life bringer, a life saver. And I think that, you know, the most important thing we can do is realize that worry is usually, if not always, false expectations appearing real. It's fear, you know, and that's, fear is a great acronym for, you know, false expectations appearing real. We put so much emphasis on things that may or may not happen and worry about them. I'm guilty from time to time, even today, but I'm able to immediately, remove myself from it through just, you know, doing a gratitude journal or doing breathing techniques or taking some form of action. And the best thing you can do to overcome fear or worry is to go into action. Now, I'm not just talking about useless action. I'm talking about, you know, okay, what can I do that will move me away from this situation quickly? So maybe, like, for example, right now I'm trying to sell all my things in a storage unit or give them away, because I want that storage unit empty. So you look at what is it you want. I'm going to use my storage unit example because that's what I'm in the middle of right now. But it's like, okay, I want that storage unit empty by, and you set a date, and then you decide on the steps that you're going to take to achieve that. So, you know, it's like step one is to sort the other unit, make room for some of the stuff that I need to keep from there. Step two is to find somebody to come and pick up the stuff, so Salvation Army or Veterans Association, you know, the organizations that are doing good on the planet, you call them, you set a date, they come and pick up stuff. You know, it's like, but it's moving into action so that you have step one, step two, step three, step four, and that takes your mind off of the worry and puts your mind at ease because you are actually getting something done towards your end goal. Your end, you know, the end intention, whatever term one wants to use. But it's taking action. When we sit and stew, we don't go anywhere. We don't get any further ahead with what we're trying to achieve. We just sit and stew in our own juices instead of getting out there and making things happen in a positive way. Now, sometimes we just have to stop and smell the roses for a while, or smell the coffee, or whatever term one wants to use there as well. But it's like we sometimes just have to stop and do some deep breathing, because that centers us, and then from there we can think more clearly about the next steps. So there is that aspect.
And
I have also
sometimes I have found that just doing a chore, like, when I have something I'm really worried about and yet I have to do my taxes or something, sometimes just sitting down to do the taxes and focus on this mundane task can get you cleared up temporarily, and then you're ready to focus on what you want to accomplish.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that's a great point, Dr. Erica, because I think forget is that it really does benefit you to look at everything as a meditation in motion. Like when I'm washing dishes, you know, and I actually really have learned to love washing dishes. I used to hate it. You know, when I thought it was a chore, I hated it. But when I started to make it a meditation, it became fun. And people always comment on my salads. I make amazing salads. And so, but why do I? Because one, they're healthy. So it became something that I started to enjoy doing. And now for me, it's truly a meditation. I literally am in a different space when I'm creating whatever it is, whether it's a salad or dressing or a new recipe I'm trying or my new favorite banana bread or whatever it is. I'm in a meditation as I'm doing it. And I think if we can start to see, you know, it's kind of like the movie Karate Kid. It's like, you know, that motion as he's cleaning the fence or painting the fence. It's that motion. It's just getting into a space of seeing it as a meditation, whatever it is. And even the most mundane job, such as doing your taxes, at least for me it is, and it sounds like it is for you and for many people, I'm sure.
Right.
It's just getting into the motion of doing it and seeing it as a meditation. What, you know, and when you're there, nothing is a chore anymore. It's such a powerful way to reframe your life. I mean, that's what I'm doing at the storage units. I'm moving stuff around and I'm seeing it. Instead of going in and saying, oh, gosh, I've got to move all this stuff, it's like, okay, let's take it all out and let's see how we can creatively put it in so that I can find everything I need to find.
So I have a question around this type of thing. How can we instantly improve our attitude from being a helpless victim, as so many people feel when they're diagnosed with a deadly disease? You know, how can we become an empowered victor and in control of our life and situation?
Great, great question, because it is so easy to fall into victimhood. I did. I'm not any different than anybody else. I went into all of the stages that people talk about, you know, the denial, the anger, the frustration, the victim, you know, feeling like a victim. But the truth is that if we can look at it instead as a lesson, a teacher. I think that was one of the most powerful questions I was asked by Dr. Siegel as well, other than the gratitude journal part, was the whole thing of, do you see cancer as your friend? Well, of course not. I mean, no way I see cancer as my friend. Great. Do you see it as your enemy? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, you know, if you think about it, whether you see it as your friend or your enemy, you're keeping it around, because you're constantly thinking either about how, if it's a friend, how can you make it a better friend? And if it's an enemy, how can you get rid of it? So instead of seeing it that way, ask yourself, what is the lesson to be learned? See it as your teacher, because once you learn the lesson, you know how when you're in junior, you're in kindergarten, you graduate into first grade, and when you're in junior school or whatever they call it these days, then you graduate into, you know, your senior years, and when you graduate from there, you go on to college. It's like once you've learned the lesson, you move on. And I think that was the really big key for me. I learned that my lesson with cancer was that I was not having any fun, and I hated the work I was doing, but I kept doing it. And I remember working with a gentleman years ago. He was such a special man. I mean, he had two beautiful children. He loved and adored those children. He would do anything for them. And he had created this multi-million-dollar business. The problem was he hated the work he was doing. And yet it was making such a lot of money for him that he was unable to allow it he was unable to move on. And I remember when I worked with him, and he was doing great for about a year, 2 years, actually 2 years. And then I never heard from him for a while. And then I heard from his wife, and she said, he really wants you to be here now. And when I saw him, I couldn't believe what had happened. The cancer had come back with a vengeance. And as he was passing away, he said to me, you know, I did everything you said. I changed my diet. I went to the gym. I got healthy, you know, fit. He said that the one thing that I didn't do was the one thing that was eating me up inside every single day. I kept doing the work I hated. Instead of selling the business like you suggested, which would have made him millions, he kept doing the work because he wanted to leave something for his children. His children would have rather had him than anything he could have left. And when he passed away, he said, please tell anybody that you're working with, quit doing what you hate doing. And I had learned that lesson as well, Dr. Erica. If you keep doing what you hate doing, you'll keep getting what you don't want to get. And so, you know, it's stress, anxiety, turmoil, you know, like I know this is not what I should be doing, but I can't stop doing it because the money's good, you know. And I'll tell you, there's been times when I've made a lot of money, and there's been times when I haven't made very much at all. But the happiest times are when I'm doing what I love, whether or not I'm making a lot of money. And I think that's what people need to learn, is to let go of the things that they're holding on to that are bringing them no joy. That's a lesson, you know. And so, again, going back to that, what is the lesson? When you learn the lesson, then you move on. And I'll tell you, I've had a heck of a lot of fun since I stopped not having fun when I learned the lesson. You know, when I learned... And it isn't that it's always been
so
a joy
powerful.
Ride, you know. Life is... Yeah. You know, we all know that life is ebbs and flows. There's good times, there's not such good times. But it's not what happens to you, it's how you relate to what happens to you that's important. And when you start to relate to things as, okay, what's the lesson here? What am I supposed to learn? You'll learn the lesson, you'll move on. Sometimes the lesson takes longer to learn. But she'll learn it, right? It's easy to say that when we get older as well.
I mean, I've always talked about that, how your body has such wisdom. And when I was in a small office and I was about to become chair of my department, I started banging my knees on the desk. And I had been in that office for about 15 years. But it was because I was ready to get out of there that I was banging my knees. You know,
yeah.
I saw the symbolism of it. And, you know, that's a small example. Your knees can heal. But, you know, it gets bigger if you don't pay attention. To pay attention to the lesson. So I have another really important question to ask you, because this is so touted in the news and on the media and on the internet, nutrition and diet. How does eating healthy, natural foods help our body to heal? And is that the answer? You're already revealing that that's not the whole answer.
Right. I mean, that's why I wrote Instant Energy. And energy, you know, I had the epiphany when the book was done and I had not made energy an acronym. I had just written the book Instant Energy. But when I went to bed and it was Thanksgiving, the symbolism for me was so significant that it was Thanksgiving. The book was done, off to the publisher, and I was ready to relax and enjoy my day. I had, you know, everything set up. I had all my bath accoutrements, and I had food, healthy food chopped up, and, you know, homemade hummus, and you name it. I had it all set for the day. I went to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking I'll just sleep until I wake up, which would have been a first for a long time, you know, because when you're working on a book, it's like, get it done. I woke up at 6 o'clock. Energy is an acronym. Energy is an acronym. Because I don't teach that there's just one way. We are a whole person. And so we're a mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual body, not just a physical body, not just an emotional body, not just a spiritual body, and not just a mental body. We are all of those things put together. And so it was the epiphany was energy is an acronym for all of the things I teach. And that was, of course, nutrition is definitely there. But what's the first thing you can't live without? Air. So it's breathing. So it's exhale fully first so that you can fully inhale. That was what I learned way back in 1971 in India when I was studying yoga in an ashram. Exhale fully first, that way you can fully inhale. So that was number one. But number two was nutrition, excellence daily. And so it was really important, not just, and now I can say it's the beginning of the year, right? Not just Monday or January 1st, but all year long. You have to have nutrition excellence in your program. Now, you can cheat, but why not cheat with things that are, you know, high quality? You want chocolate? Get dark chocolate. Learn to love it. I mean, I come from a culture, I'm a Scots girl from a wee place called Ochvi in Scotland, and milk chocolate was what I grew up on. So for me to start eating dark chocolate, it was not an easy thing at first, but now I can't. I would pick dark chocolate any day over milk chocolate. You know, you learn to adapt your taste buds. They will, over 21 days to 3 months, you can change your taste buds significantly. It takes basically, it actually takes 90 to 120 days to replace your red blood cells. And during that time, you're also replacing them with a new cellular memory. So that it doesn't take long to change something in your life if you make a decision to do so. So, you know, it's like, okay, you can cheat, but make sure that you're cheating with healthier forms of whatever it is you like than not. Like, I love coffee. So I will have organic coffee. So I know that there's not 300 different chemicals.
But I have a question here. What happens when you're out at a restaurant, you're out with friends, and you know, and you don't have the most healthy thing around, and you slip and you have the regular coffee or you have the milk chocolate? What then?
Yeah. You know what? If that's when you're out with friends and it's not a daily habit, it's once in a while treat. And that's, I believe that as long as 80% of the time you are doing what's healthy and supporting your body, then once in a while to have something that's not so healthy isn't going to affect you negatively. It's only if it's a constant. Most of us live the other way around. 80% of the time we're not living healthily.
Right.
20% of the time I think I'll go to the gym today. And then that's a one-time thing for, you know, several months. That's what's not healthy. But to have a treat or to cheat once in a while at a restaurant is not going to hurt you. And the other thing, too, is when you're at a restaurant, ask the question of yourself, is this going to build me up or tear me down? And so when mm-hmm. I'm at a restaurant, I'll have, you know, I might not be able to get the best thing around, but I'll make the best choice out of what's on that menu, you know. So instead of the 12-ounce steak, if you're a steak eater, I'm not. But if you are, instead of the 12-ounce steak, why not get the 4-ounce steak? And then get lots of sides, you know, like a salad on the side and some steamed broccoli or whatever their vegetable of the day is. And have that. And avoid the,
I
if you're going to have a baked potato. Oh,
I just did that. I came to one of these places, like a Friday's, with, you know, mostly fried food and everything, and I'm really eating as healthy as I can lately. So I ordered a turkey Reuben, I think it's called a Rachel, without the bread and without the cheese. So what I really wanted was turkey and the sauerkraut.
Exactly.
I felt so good. And they actually gave it to me, and I had a salad with it. It felt so good to make that choice.
And you feel so much lighter afterwards, you know. I mean, when you're talking about that, Dr. Erica, I think of that movie when Harry met Sally, and Sally's in the restaurant, and she goes through her list of things. Well, I want this, but I don't want that, and I don't want that, and I want this, but I don't want that, and I don't want this, you know. And people say to me,
right.
Oh, restaurants won't do that. But they will. Most restaurants want you to come back.
All right, but
yep.
Well, we're sort of running short of time, and I'd love you to give the total acronym. So what is the rest of it?
Okay. So the next part of that is the second E, which is exercise for cellular rejuvenation. So the things that would rejuvenate your cells are bouncing on one of those exercise balls, or bouncing on a rebounder, or going swimming in clean water, pure water if possible, not chlorinated water, because the skin is 80% porosity. So, you know, chlorine will be absorbed into your skin. But swimming is a good one. Walking is another great exercise that really stimulates your cells at the cellular level. So those are some of the things, exercise for cellular rejuvenation. The R is rest, relax, rejuvenate. And that's what most of us don't do in our developed countries. We do not take time out. We feel guilty when we do. And I spend a lot of time working with my patients and my clients, just teaching them how to let go of the guilt and realize that the body has to rejuvenate. It needs rest in order to rejuvenate. So rest, relax, rejuvenate. And then G is for gratitude attitude, which, you know, makes sense because what you focus on expands. And the why is your five keys. And the reason that because people say, well, there's only five keys in your book, but there's the why in energy. And the fact is that I have hundreds of strategies in that book. And the reason that I do is because no two people are alike. So we have to find what five things you're willing to do every day. You know, we kind of say, we have a joke in the office that, you know, it's five minutes, five times a day, instant energy guaranteed. And it was just kind of, you know, someone came up with it. I think I did, just for fun. But it has become like a standard that we use now, because the truth is, if you take 5 minutes, five times a day, you will start to have energy, whether you're a cancer patient or the caregiver. Think about the poor caregiver, your family caregiver. They're usually out working full time, and then they're coming home and they're taking care of their family member, or maybe they're working at home and taking care of their family member who's got cancer. Their time schedule is booked solid. They don't have a lot of energy and they don't have a lot of time. So showing people how in 5 minutes you can instantly energize yourself is a very key thing, very key aspect of living.
Wow.
And that's the acronym in a nutshell.
That's beautiful. So before we end, tell our viewers, listeners, how they can get in touch with you and how they can get your book.
Yes, the easiest way, Dr. Erica, for them to get in touch with me and also get something for free, because I have my 10 top tips that have been the favorite tips that people have shared over the years. are all compiled in an ebook, a small ebook, that people can get at 5minuteenergytips.com. So it's the number 5minuteenergytips with an S. .com. And there they can also, there's also a place where they can order the book. And if people order the book through me versus going to Amazon, what they'll also receive afterwards is the PDF of my pyramid of energy, which gives them the whole picture, colored picture of the five keys. It's an absolutely beautiful PDF that we send out to people. So.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Wow. Ease my mind a lot about this, because first of all, very often it's men talking about health and healing and nutrition, and the male mind is very linear, so it's like you have to eat this way, and you know, it becomes so rigid. So
yeah.
I love what you're sharing, you know, the freedom, you know, that it doesn't
Absolutely.
Have to be so rigid, but it does
Absolutely.
Have to be really consistent. What you're saying more than anything is the consistency
yes.
and the attitude, that attitude
yes.
of gratitude, consistency to really choose health. So
absolutely.
You are offering so much. It's such a pleasure to talk with you again.
Oh, it's my joy and pleasure to talk with you as well, Dr. Erica.
So thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you.
So I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond and Be Healthy and Happy. And if you're ready to create lasting love, click the link on my website at drericagoodstone.com to get the 30 love lessons for your soul. You'll be really happy you did. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.